It's changing now as sleep education is becoming more a thing. We used to wear it as a badge of honor to only need 5 or 6 hours of sleep. But now we know that we need 7 to 9 hours of sleep to be a healthy adult every single night. Dr. Matthew Walker also says the number of people who can survive on 6 hours of sleep or less without impairment is exactly zero.
Bonjour, friends, and welcome to Whole Body Optimism for Healthcare Professionals, the podcast that's all about embracing a modern approach to positivity, clean living, and personal growth. I'm Dr. Chrissy, and I'll be your guide on this journey to a happier, healthier, and more optimistic you. All right, y'all, today I am so excited because we have a very special guest. As you guys know, we are emphasizing on sleep this month. And Lauren Ziegler is here today. We go way back. She used to live in New Orleans. We met through some mutual friends. And I am just so excited because I stumbled upon her whenever I was doing a meditation on the app Aura. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know this girl. I have to reach out to her. She is doing such amazing things. I then found out she is trained by the International Association of Yoga Therapy. She is a specialist in this, and she could tell you more about this. I'm probably messing up all the verbiage and the terminology behind it, but she actually has a degree in psychology with the emphasis in mindfulness as well. And all these things together, I was like, wow, this girl is amazing. And then I find out she has an emphasis in teaching practitioners about how we can use yoga tools to provide a holistic approach in medicine, and in particular in restorative yoga, decompressing the spine, relaxation, and specifically sleep. So I am so excited that Lauren is here today, and I cannot wait for y'all to hear everything she has to say. So thanks so much for being here, Lauren.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. So Lauren, tell our listeners out there, how did you get to where you are? Now, I spoke about all these wonderful things you're doing and this niche thing, but did you decide when you were in college or growing up that you always knew you wanted to help people with this field?
Not necessarily. Actually, my sleep focus came a little bit later throughout my experience. But originally, I was looking for ways to deal with my mind and my emotions from a young age. I mean, maybe back even in high school. I started seeking out alternative methods, philosophies, school of thoughts, things that would help me understand how to be a human and how to handle emotions that were difficult. I was very hard on myself. I was a perfectionist, and I just really needed to learn how to soften and learn how to feel more okay and more safe and more at ease. And so I started seeking out healing methods through meditation, mindfulness-based stress reduction, and different modalities of meditation, including yoga nidra, which is one that is my main personal practice now. It's a deep restorative lying down sleep meditation. And I also had a journey with about 10 years of extreme physical chronic pain, which is how I discovered the spinal decompression, and also these mind-body approaches and how to handle pain, how to handle mental and physical pain, how to heal myself. And all of this, you know, led to where I am now. So I definitely have so much empathy for people that are on a kind of pain journey, or really just for the suffering that we experience. And these methods have definitely given me the answers that I was seeking. So that's why I did them.
Wow. So I know you've mentioned some statistics about sleep, but I want you to tell our listeners, what are some important statistics that people that are listening here need to know about sleep, how it impacts us, and how much sleep we usually get as a human?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. Well, how it impacts us. I would love to emphasize from the yogic perspective why we need sleep. Like, what is it doing for us? And then what happens if we're not getting enough, and what is enough, right? But what do we say after we wake up after a good night's sleep? We go outside and we say, oh, that was delicious, or that felt so good. Or we say, that was divine. Because there's something about a good night's sleep that does it for us, like nothing else.
Agree.
And And from a yogic perspective, it is because we enter a deep state of nothingness, where there's not like the stimulation and response of normal day-to-day life. There's not my personality, my tendencies, the things that I like, the things that I don't like and wish were different. There's none of that. And so we get a mini freedom. We get a nothingness state of ourselves as limitless and expansive. And we get to be in this version of ourselves where we're not trapped in the things that cause us this very human suffering, like I talked about. So in the Sanskrit, there's a word for that called moksha, and it means liberation. So each night we get a mini liberation. And spiritual or in a soul context, that is what's happening. And then of course, in a physical context, many things are happening with our sleep that are rejuvenating us and allowing us to reset and wake up feeling refreshed. But it is this deep state that we crave and that we absolutely need. And there's no other state, says Dr. Matthew Walker, he's a sleep expert. There's no other state than sleep that gives a more powerful redressing of physical and mental health at every level of analysis. And this is based on 17,000 studies.
Wow.
So failed by the lack of education about sleep, I think we just don't realize how incredible it is, how important it is. It's really the elixir for life. It's a healing balm. And Shakespeare even said, sleep is the chief nourisher in life's feast. So short sleep is a short life. And if we sleep longer, we have a longer life result.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's changing now as sleep education is becoming more a thing. We used to wear it as a badge of honor to only need 5 or 6 hours of sleep. But now we know that we need 7 to 9 hours of sleep to be a healthy adult every single night. And this Dr. Matthew Walker also says the number of people who can survive on 6 hours of sleep or less without impairment is exactly zero. So once we drop below the 7 hours, then we can measure these objective impairments in the brain and the body. And the problem is that 35% of adults in the US are sleeping less than 7 hours a night on average. And 30% of adults struggle with insomnia. It might even be a larger percentage now, post-pandemic, they see. But at this point, the CDC has announced that insufficient sleep is a public health crisis.
Wow.
Of the detrimental effects of this and how many people aren't getting the sleep needed.
Now, what's interesting, I talked to a lot of healthcare professionals about their daily routines, and I don't meet a lot of people who are getting more than 7 hours of sleep. To me, this is worrisome because the statistics that you're presenting, especially if you feel like you're listening, you're like, well, I only get 6 hours. Well, how much more would you be on your game and providing better care to your patients if you had that 7 to 9 hours of sleep? I mean, I just think that is so important here.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been shown that in one night of 4 hours of sleep, the T cells go down 70%.
Wow.
So I do think medical professionals that are going into these settings with insufficient sleep that are totally exposed.
Right. And what's unfortunate is a lot of the cultures, and like you mentioned, this badge of honor. I just remember sitting around at some of the checkouts in the morning and seeing people talk about how many consults you saw in the 24-hour period. Now, this 24-hour period, you're stuck at the hospital and taking care of patients. So you may be getting 30 minutes of sleep at max. And how much detriment is that giving to the patients? And these 24-hour call shifts, especially for trauma surgeons, are still in existence. People are still doing this, knowing all this data that is coming out about sleep. I'm curious what you think about that and how is that affecting our patients?
Yeah, it is the society that we live in and that unfortunately is structured that way. I think it was several years ago where the CDC also determined shift work as a carcinogen because of
Wow.
its effect. Now, the good news is that we need 7 to 9 hours, and those hours can happen anytime during that 24-hour period. There are effects, you know, results of being off on the circadian rhythm. So if we're off on what is our natural internal body clock, then there will be outcomes, but we can still make up for that sleep within the 24-hour period. It's just, I think, what our culture is valuing in terms of productivity and availability and getting things done. And for that kind of work that you're talking about, it's necessary. So we do need people to do this. Right. It's just learning, I think, skills to supplement that sleep, to just make sure that you're getting the nourishment. And yoga nidra is one of those. And I think it gives people a lot of peace of mind that are in those positions, because when you do this specific type of sleep meditation practice, 30 minutes of it is equal to 2.5 hours of deep sleep in terms
oh,
of what's
wow.
logically in the brain and the body. So you can supplement the lack of sleep.
Wow. That's, I think that's very important. I've never heard of that. And maybe I should be doubling down on some of those whenever I'm doing night shifts or whatnot, and I can't sleep that well during the day. Maybe this is something that potentially like a night shift worker can use to really extend that quality of really good sleep whenever they can use something like this, if they can't seem to get those 7 hours of sleep during the day. So what kind of symptoms do we get from insufficient sleep? Can you tell us a little bit about that and help us understand why it's so bad?
Yeah. A lot of us that aren't getting the sleep that we need don't necessarily realize these things because we're so used to them. I mean, if you have chronic insomnia and you're very aware of your sleep issues, you will notice these things. But as I read through them, maybe you can think about, do I experience that and to what extent? Trying to get a sense of how, yeah, I do have that symptom. And is it related to my sleep? And could I be feeling better in these ways? So one of the things that we endure with insufficient sleep is persistent fatigue, constant tiredness and lack of energy, and that feeling of needing to push through or just trying to get the gears turning and they just don't start to turn. And so if you're experiencing that, for example, you might think, well, that's just, you know, that's just my energy. It's always been that way. But if you do make some changes for your sleep, it's possible that this could improve. Another one, cognitive impairment, like I mentioned before, impairment. We start to lose memory, struggle with retaining knowledge, and learn, struggle with focus and decision-making. Emotional distress. This is one that I experience the next day after not enough. It's really clear. It's really clear, I think, that kind of exaggeration of stress. Everything feels more difficult. And we can be more impulsive. We can be more reactive. We can feel out of control, more anxiety, mood swings as a result of sleeplessness. So another thing is physical health concerns. Compromised immune function is one of the things that I mentioned, but we might just physically feel crappy, you know, just achy, sore, just that kind of feeling, sick to our stomachs just a little bit. And also, as we know, we have more risk for long-term health issues like Alzheimer's and dementia. So getting less sleep is now linked with those physical conditions developing later. Daily functioning, it just becomes so hard to maintain a consistent schedule around, you know, a routine and being productive consistently. So definitely those are some of the things that we notice. And I think with chronic issues over time, we start to notice our skin changing, weight changing, craving for unhealthy food. We start to age more quickly and we can see it in our face, things like this. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so relevant. And especially if you're a, you know, you're listening and you work 24-hour shifts, especially if you're taking in-house call and you don't get sleep overnight, you can definitely identify what some of these symptoms that you may bringing to check out in the next day when you're checking out to the next team that's coming on. You could really see yourself maybe having some of these, you know, impulsivities and reactivities, and you're not your normal self. If you were well rested and you can think about yourself that this feels so good when you wake up versus when you're given this checkout after you've been up for 24 hours, it's just a totally different mood, a different stress level, and it can totally change the way you communicate with people, how you're taking care of the patients. It just, to me, it's just, I don't know, understand why we have continued to perpetuate this 24-hour call, sleeplessness for even our trainees. A lot of times we say, oh, well, the trainees can do it because they're so much younger, but we're just shortening minutes of their lives by having them do this. So I'm all with you here.
Yeah. Not to mention it's not enjoyable to work away for us or for the provider. You know, I think that we can be hard on ourselves even about that and think, oh, I should have more control. I should be able to be more patient, but we are working against these real objective detrimental effects that have happened in the brain.
Right. Now let's focus now on, okay, now you're off, you get to sleep and you can't sleep. So maybe not clinical insomnia or like you fall asleep and then you wake up in the middle of the night. Why do you think that we're having trouble sleeping when we should be tired and sleep through the night?
That's such a good question because I think two things are happening. One is that we don't truly understand and value sleep, and maybe we're making lifestyle choices and behavior choices. But then there's that piece of like you understand the importance of sleep and you really do and even want to prevent those long-term health consequences, and yet you still have a hard time getting the sleep that you need. And whether it's one night or three nights or it's an ongoing issue, what could be happening there? Well, I like to look at kind of three things. One is circadian rhythm and looking at sleep behavioral things and daytime things and routine things. But then there's also sleep drive. This is a component of it, which is kind of like our hunger for sleep. How sleepy are we? And when do we get sleepy? And so these kinds of timing things throughout the day. And often the biggest piece that I find patients are struggling with is hyperarousal in the nervous system. So a nervous system that is in the sympathetic state and maybe kind of lives in that sympathetic state most of the time or has for many years. Or maybe it's just today because something stressful happened or something is going to happen tomorrow. But it's that shifting out of the sympathetic state that we need to skillfully do and get into that parasympathetic state in order to get the sleep that we need. And there are really deep-seated reasons why, because sometimes people lay there and they're like, you know, I don't feel stressed. It's not like I'm frantic here and all activated. I'm just awake. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh. I could totally relate to that.
Yeah. So maybe it's not a totally distressing situation, but there is still some kind of nervous system activation going on. And that's where the methods that I teach, like CBTI, which is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, mixed with mindfulness for insomnia, mixed with relaxation techniques that are reliable, can really help people with feeling empowered that, okay, I can change this for myself. And often it requires understanding and like kind of pulling up from the surface, what is happening in the mind? What is happening in the mind that I don't necessarily realize is going on because they're just thoughts and maybe they're really compelling and normal thoughts. And yet the thoughts that we have affect our stress levels in our body. The way that I perceive or view something is going to have an impact on my body. For example, if I'm walking down the street and I see somebody that I know and I try to wave hello and they just keep walking, I might think, oh, they didn't see me. And Alternatively, if I start waving, like a crazy person, and then they keep walking, but I think, oh no, they don't like me. They're upset with me. I did something wrong. What is the deal here? I'm going to have physical stress. I'm going to start to get a little bit more warm. My heart is going to go faster. Hormones are going to pump through my body. And so this is the kind of subtle activation that some kind of thought can have. So I like to think of them as sleep obstructing thoughts.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So I'm sitting here thinking there are times when I know that I have stressful events in my life and I find myself waking up at 2, 3 in the morning and not able to go to sleep again. Can you help me understand, is there something that you offer or is there something that we should be doing? Because I know I speak to a lot of other people who also experience these things. And maybe this is just something for healthcare professionals, but maybe you see it elsewhere too. If you have clients that do this, where can we start to start getting some relief from this? I don't know, midnight or insomnia. I don't know if there's a name for it.
Yeah, that's actually something I notice a lot with people. So very common. And in that particular case, because with sleep, it's always important to look at it holistically, look at what some root causes could be, talk to a medical professional, get some input. What is really happening here? Is there a condition like sleep apnea, or it could be something else other than insomnia. But in this particular case, the waking up at 3 a.m., that's where these mind-body techniques really excel. They really work well in that case, because there's nothing that you can do to make yourself sleep, right? You can't just decide, now I'm going to go back to sleep, because
well,
that
that's
doesn't
a relief.
Yeah, sleep is, it's one of those things that the harder that we try, the more we can't do it, the harder it becomes. It's so elusive like that, which feeds into this anxiety about the sleep, because we know we need to get back to sleep. Maybe we even start doing sleep math at that time. Okay, it's 3 a.m. I know I'm going to get up at 7 a.m. This many more hours, and there's this that I have to do tomorrow. And we go into this kind of cycle of, which is activating for the nervous system, because we know we want to sleep, but we can't make it happen. So what we can do is create the conditions internally to tip the scale and make sleep more likely to happen. So this is something that mindfulness and yoga nidra in particular, this type of meditation, nidra means sleep. So it's yogic sleep. And that helps us practice this mentality that's needed, because it's different than most things we do. When we plan and we strategize and we put in some effort, usually that's a good thing and it works for us. But in this case, it's really about letting go, letting it happen, taking off the effort. And I recommend doing something though, something that will induce sleep. So not necessarily like a distraction or giving up and getting up or reading or doing something else, but something that allows you to stay in the conditions where sleep is likely to happen. And then like these relaxation strategic practices that induce that state, that allow you to be there and have patience with what is happening in your mind while you get into that sleep state again. So yoga nidra meditation is the tactic that I use in that case.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely have used, like, I, for instance, I'll use like the Peloton app has such good sleep meditations. They're 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever you're feeling. And that usually works for me, is just like using some kind of meditation, staying in bed, trying not to, but I do that sleep math. I do like, okay, I have to wake up at this time. Like, will I have had enough sleep hours? Like, what am I doing tomorrow? And things like that. So I empathize with those people who are experiencing that as well. Now, shifting over to healing your body holistically, I want to ask you, I have a eerie suspicion that you're going to agree with this, but that sleep has a huge factor in healing your whole body. Can you tell me about your viewpoints on if you're going through a medical illness, for instance, like me, infertility, and healing from that journey? And that doesn't necessarily have to mean physical healing, but how does sleep play into that? You know, being with your mindfulness training, and what are your thoughts on that?
There are many, I think all processes and systems of the body are healing during sleep, are really cleaning, being rejuvenated. So we could hone in on the hormonal system or the nervous system or the immune system, but all of them are going to be affected in sleep. I find what's fascinating is during the deep sleep process, what occurs in our brain. And our brain is like a sponge during that time. It shrinks a little bit. And then the cerebral spinal fluid through the glial cells floods in and cleans out the brain. So I think of it, well, we met in New Orleans. It's like when they power wash the street the next morning, like just they power wash it with water, get all the stuff out of there. And this is what's happening in our brain. And this is the process of encoding memory and leaving behind the information that's not relevant and solidifying information that we do want to keep. So I don't have to remember where I parked my car 4 days ago. You know, and this process is happening and it's like a cleaning for the brain. And so this happens each night during deep sleep. And there are things that get in the way of that process. But when that happens, then we are our brain and our body can do all of those natural things that it needs to do at night. If that process is blocked, say because of using like alcohol actually blocks this deep sleep natural process as well as sleeping pills. And so say I took a nightcap right before bed, I know that I'm not going to get this physical brain cleaning that I need. And you might feel just maybe a little bit more foggy the next morning. But what's happening over time is that a protein is building up in the brain. And it's an amyloid protein that builds up in the brain and contributes to causes really dementia and Alzheimer's. So over time of getting of not getting that physical process that's needed, then we are, I mean, it's directly correlated at this point, going to develop those conditions.
Wow. So, you know, if I'm hearing this right, is if you have a job that's contributing to a lack of sleep, or you're not prioritizing sleep to be something higher in your priority list and getting those intentional hours of sleep every night, you're subjecting yourself to not enough glial changes and cleaning that the brain could actually benefit from overnight, and thus subjecting you to maybe dementia, Alzheimer's, and things of that matter. And I can only imagine, you know, that built up anxiety, stress, and all the things that the brain needs to be cleaned of overnight whenever you're sleeping.
Right. Which, of course, is going to contribute to all different kinds of medical conditions and physical conditions. There is that idea that if I could just have a nightcap, I'm going to sedate myself a little bit. I'm going to feel relaxed. You know, on the surface level, it feels like it's working, or, you know, even with a sleeping pill, but it is masking the symptoms that are causing the discomfort. It is covering those up. So it doesn't go away. I believe the tension that we carry into the night is going to remain in the next day unless we can process it in some way.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you mentioned also about CBT for insomnia. Now, I want to focus in on that for the last few minutes we have here because I think people have maybe a misperception about it. And I know the things I've read about it, it's been the standard of care for insomnia. And I know we briefly talked about it earlier, but can you tell our listeners a little bit more about CBT? And especially for insomnia, and maybe how they can work with you.
CBTI has been the recommended treatment now and within the medical field. There are not that many practitioners doing it, and it, depending on who you work with, it can be a helpful approach for chronic insomnia, only because studies have shown that sleep hygiene, like creating the conditions in your bedroom, is not enough for long-term sleep problems. So CBTI is an attempt to get in there a little bit deeper. The thing that I love about it is that it helps to address the sleep obstructing thoughts and helps us learn different ways to reduce the hyperarousal of the nervous system and really addressing those thoughts that feeds into sleep issues. And then there are some components, like, for example, mild sleep restriction that can help with creating more sleep drive in people. And so there's a behavioral kind of adjustment thing, and there's some tracking involved. It is available, and there are actually apps. There's one called CBTI Coach, and that's free. And you can download it and just go through and kind of learn the information that they have to teach there. In my work, I combine CBTI methods with the mindfulness for sleep and this ancient method of yoga nidra. So I find that combination very effective because it gets in even more deeply into resolving what is happening in the body and the mind on a deep level. So it carries people into the deep sleep state. I find that so incredibly empowering that people can learn, okay, no matter what's going on in my mind, I can still bring myself reliably into deep sleep. So it is, if you're researching CBTI, I think, and it resonates, then that's a great thing to try or a great thing to recommend. And then there are practitioners like myself who work with and have experience working with the modifications of it. So that can help patients get the most out of it often when those are applied specifically for the individual.
And just for anyone who's listening, you've never heard the words CBT, it's not CBD, like, the CBD oils and stuff like that. It's cognitive behavioral therapy. And this is something that is being used, I think, for a lot of different things, especially in the behavior world. And specifically with the CBTI, that's for insomnia. So I think the more and more people realize that this is something that they can use, and it is a behavioral decision that they have the ability to choose to make these decisions, gives yourself more autonomy. It's liberating, to be honest. It really is. And so I think Lauren would be the best person to work with if you are interested in CBTI and mindfulness and her yoga therapy, because I think she just incorporates it really nicely. And I will be signing up here soon, and I encourage everybody else to do it as well. Lauren, thank you so much for being here today, and I am looking forward to being in touch with you and working with you in the future.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. Y'all, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Lauren Ziegler. Check her out at laurenziegler.com and find out how she can help you get a better night's sleep. I wanted you to know, if you are listening to this before February 2025, she is hosting a sleep wellness retreat in the beautiful Costa Rica. You have got to check it out if you are listening to this before that date. I will put the registration in the podcast show notes so you can check it out and sign up very easily. I am definitely going to look into it for myself, so I think you should too. Thank you so much for joining us on this uplifting journey through whole body optimism for healthcare professionals. We really hope you found this episode today as enlightening and inspiring as we did. Remember, optimism isn't just a state of mind, it's a way of life. And you have the power to shape your own destiny. Be sure to follow us on this podcast and on Instagram and Facebook to learn more about practical and simple tips to find your true whole body optimism.